Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
At Ross, you'll find everything your kids need when they go back to school. From fashion to school supplies to dorm room decor, Ross has it all. Because it isn't just the first day of school for them, it's a new year, a new look, and endless possibilities. When they walk back through those school doors, they're a different kid than the one who walked out months ago, ready for anything. Back to school starts at Ross. Find your nearest Ross at rossstores.com.
Hello, my spooky friends.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
How are you doing, Cassie? How have you been?
I've been so busy, as you know. Mm-hmm. We've been going a little crazy getting the podcast ready. We're like less than 2 weeks away now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right now we're like setting up promo stuff, yep. And something a little spooky happened to me this week that I have to tell you.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Okay, so we have a friend that put together a couple different jingles for us that we got to choose from for this podcast.
This is true. Shout out Mel.
And okay, so this is the story. I have a boyfriend. We're long distance right now. So every night we like do the whole FaceTime thing.
Cute.
Right. And you would think it got a little spooky this week, but it's fine.
Okay.
So we FaceTime every night and then like it goes through the night. So then he usually gets up before me and then he's the one that ends the call. And I'm just like having another hour or two of sleeping from there.
Okay.
But last week there was a night where I heard him end the call, like that little whoosh sound.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Which like I sometimes hear it and then I just fall right back asleep. It's no big deal. But this time it wasn't just a whoosh. It was immediately followed by the jingle that we actually ended up choosing for this podcast.
Wait, okay. No.
We hadn't chosen the jingle yet, which is interesting, but it was the jingle we ended up choosing for this podcast blaring out of my MacBook, like full volume.
I'm sorry.
That was me. I was like, and I'm looking at I'm like half asleep. So who knows if I really knew what was going on. But I'm like, where is this coming from? Nothing. My music app isn't open. Nothing's open except the FaceTime. And even when I closed out of the FaceTime like window, it's still blaring at me. It just played until the end and then it stopped.
I don't know what I would have done. Dude, that's actually terrifying.
It was scary, but I was like also tired, so I was just like, anyways, and then I went back to sleep.
So now we know that Cassie would not survive in most situations.
I would not survive the haunted jingle.
No, you would not.
I was like, that's so weird. And then the next night it happened, or I guess morning, it happened again.
No, ew, I don't like this.
He hangs up and then all of a sudden the podcast jingle is blaring into my ears and I'm like, okay, this is going to happen like every night. Like, what's going on?
I actually hate this.
We're haunted. It's fine. And
the podcast is haunted already. It's episode 3.
I'm not surprised. Both of us having a horror podcast, one of us is bound to get haunted.
That's true. I do have a haunted doll in my house, supposedly. So,
oh my God. I have a haunted fruit cellar.
That's true.
I literally just like went into my music app. When it happened the second time, I went into my music app and I like played a random song and just closed out of it and it didn't happen again. So it was just some weird glitch. But I'm like, I don't know what the glitch even was. It was spooky.
It doesn't make sense. Like, cause like I get sometimes like if I hang up a call or something, like, or sometimes I open my laptop and like Spotify will be playing. And like that kind of makes sense, like if I was playing it on another device or something. But the jingle, like just what? I don't know
exactly
how I feel about that.
Why did it have to be the jingle? That's so my weird problem. But that's over now, for now. Love.
And that's that.
Loved the jingle. Don't want to be woken up by it again.
No, me neither. I don't like the sound of that. So it sounds like you had an interesting week in the world of horror. You experienced it for yourself.
I was in my own horror movie. I finally watched Long Legs.
Yes. Good one.
Watched Long Legs. It was actually like the jump scares got me. The jump scares got me. When I first saw Long Legs, I was like, hell no. What is that? What is that?
You're like, what is happening in there?
Yeah.
That's a weird one. I finally finished Fear Street. I watched the third Fear Street film.
Yes. Which Do you is, have an initial favorite?
I really love the second one. And I think, honestly, I think I have a bias towards Sadie Sink. I just love that girl so much. She is, like, anytime she's in a film, she's my favorite character. She's just so likable. Love her so much. And I was like, the day I watched 1666, the news about the new one came out, the prom one. So I'm excited that there's a fourth one, although I'm assuming it's like a new, I don't know if it's a new trilogy. I'm not really sure yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I bet, right, obviously right now it seems like a standalone, but their whole thing is a trilogy, so who
exactly.
knows?
Exactly. I think it'd be kind of weird for them to dip out of trilogy zone, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited about Fear Street. I still want to see Companion. Have not seen that. Mentioned that last week. You still want to see The Monkey.
I sure do. I like really want to see this monkey movie. It's going to be so bad and I'm so excited. All right. So I am our narrator today. This is my first time doing this. I'm very excited. A little nervous because it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just here and I'm going to tell you a story and I hope you enjoy the story. Today we are covering 28 Days Later from 2002. Do you know anything about this one?
Zombies?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know. I'm surprised that it's from 2002 because for some reason I know the title and I thought it was like a really old movie. So now I'm thrown off.
Oh, really?
Interesting. Because I wonder if I'm mixing it up with something else. But even if I am, like all I know about the title is my brain goes to zombies and that's where it ends.
Okay. So you're, okay. Perfect, perfect. So 20 days later. Like I said, 2002, it is a Fox Searchlight Pictures film, which was a little jarring because I haven't seen the Searchlight Pictures like opening logo in a long time. So that threw me off a little, not going to lie.
I miss it. I can see it in my mind. It's such a clear image in my mind. Where did it go?
Exactly. Where did it go? I mean, probably very reasonable explanation for that I don't know, but that's fine. The movie is directed by Danny Boyle and written by Alex Garland. And according to Garland, this film was inspired both by Night of the Living Dead and a 1951 novel titled The Day of the Triffids. If you're wondering what a triffid is, it is a fictional plant-like creature. So you're not dumb if you don't know what that word is. I felt dumb. I was like, oh, I gotta look up this word. This is awkward. I'm stupid. No, it's a plant creature.
I don't know why, but when you said that, the first image that popped in my head was Oompa Loompas.
Ooh, that would be a scary horror film, actually. Hold on.
Wait, you know those horror movies where they, like, Winnie the Pooh and Mickey Mouse, like, they're turning everything? I could totally see them doing that with some Willy Wonka, but that is beside the point.
Willy Wonka is almost a horror film as it is, so absolutely. Right. Like, give me that horror movie. Honestly, I'd be so sad for that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you knew, but this movie stars good old Cillian Murphy, our good old friend. Did I say his name right?
Yes, I think so. That's how I say it.
That's how I say it. All right, we're good, we're good. And one thing that this movie is particularly known for that I find very interesting is it's incredibly grainy and has essentially terrible, terrible quality. Literally, the first time I watched it, I had to check my internet because I was like, is there something wrong? It can't be this bad. But it was, and it's because it was shot entirely digital, which was kind of rare at the time. And so digital shot things are kind of stuck in the resolution that you've got. So a 2002 digital film on a 4K TV now, it's not going to look super great. And it was a stylistic choice. So it's not like they were accidentally made the film look bad. Like, it was part of the decision. And I think it does look good. Like, it works, but it is right on the cusp of like, oof. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like in today's standards, it's starting to get a little bit too much.
Yeah, it's very blurry.
I like the idea, though. Like, I even just always say now I miss, like, the 90s grain that, like, was on all of the
Absolutely.
Movies.
Absolutely. Scream 1, like, I look at that film and I'm like, that's so beautiful.
so cozy.
Exactly.
So I get what they're going for.
But like, if you were to look at it, like it's not even that. It looks worse than Scream, because Scream was shot, you know, film. This was shot digital. So it's a very weird kind of vibe, but you get used to it very quickly. So here we go. We're opening up on a montage of absolute carnage in a very found footage style. Think kind of VHS vibes. We've got fires in the street. We've got police barricades. The streets are full of stalled cars. People are running around. End of the world type shit. And it's very, honestly, it's very unsettling, because unfortunately, some of these images just feel a little too familiar to things that we see in the real world.
Yikes.
While we're watching the montage, the camera actually starts to pan out, and we realize we're looking at this montage on a television. It's multiple televisions, actually. Now we see multiple TVs playing montages of complete carnage. Zoom out a little more, and what do we have? We have a monkey laying on the table, strapped in front of these TVs, wires connected to its brain as it's being subjected to these lovely images that we see on the TV.
Not where I thought we were about to go.
I know. It's actually a great opening, because it's not where anybody thought we were going.
No.
We obviously assume he's kind of being studied while he's watching this, with all those like brain wires and whatever. So then we see another television with security footage on it. It's labeled Camera 3 within the Cambridge Primate Research Center. So now we know for sure this is a monkey test in place. So on the security camera, we see a group of people charging in the hallway with a purpose. They're here for a reason. They're wearing ski masks, and we watch as they enter the lab. They have a key card, which it seems they must have gotten from somewhere, because they don't seem like they belong there. Now we get a real sense of what's happening in the lab, because we see a lot of monkeys in a lot of different cages.
Poor monkeys.
I know. And you immediately are like, what the hell? The poor freaking monkeys. They seem distressed, understandably. They want out. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
We also do see in this point like some really disturbing shots of opened up monkeys and monkey heads and things of that nature. Again,
not that like animal testing is ever really moral, but okay, these are like bad, bad guys. Like they don't care.
Yeah, no, they don't give a shit. It's not cute. So then our three trespassers start looking through the lab, and we've got a girl and two guys. This girl, she seems distressed and appalled at what she's seeing, understandably. Valid. Yep. She mutters and oh God. And one of our guys tells her, keep your shit together if you want to get them out of here. So that's why they're here. They're here to get the monkeys out. Exactly. You're like, let's go. PETA would be so freaking proud.
Incredible. Amazing way to set it up like a protagonist right away. Like we are on their side.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this guy tells the other guys, get these monkeys out of their cages right now. Next thing you know, we see a scrawny, nerdy looking man walk in a lab coat. He's a scientist, all right? He's got his cup of coffee. He's walked in on a heist, and he's a little bit uncomfortable, a little unsure of what he's going to do, because he's not a big, strong man. He's just like, oh, shoot. What do I do about this? So he drops his coffee, starts sprinting towards this special little phone in the wall, and starts calling for security. Now, one of our heist men is not too fond of this. He runs over, like, rips this phone out of his hands, rips the phone out of the wall. And then it's like, oh, this guy's going to overpower our scientist friend. Like, he's got no chance, essentially.
Yeah.
He starts to ramble, saying he knows who these people are, and the heist man cuts him off, tells him to shut up and stay where he is. Like, just don't move, don't mess with us, and we won't hurt you. Scientist man interrupts and yells out, the chimps are infected. They're highly contagious.
Of course. Why did my brain not? I know this is a zombie movie.
Dude, I'm telling you, I had the same reaction as you. I was like, yes, let's get these monkeys out. And then I was like, wait, shoot.
Wait, I'm watching a horror movie.
Right? We're not supposed to cheer for this.
Oh,
it's fine.
Man. It always starts. I mean, it always starts like that. Like so many pandemics where it's like it starts in the animals. Oh my God. I'm mad at myself that I didn't get that. But
I know.
It's a fun reveal.
I did the same thing. So it's good. So now he's got their attention. But they're like, oh, wait, what'd you say? Heistman is like, what are they infected with? We get a long dramatic pause before the scientist replies with a simple rage.
Oh, dear.
They are infected with rage.
Oh, no. Are we going to have fast zombies? I don't like fast zombies.
Oh, boy.
I don't like it. Oh, dear.
So our heisters honestly don't give a rat's ass about this declaration for whatever reason. They're like, yeah, whatever. Whatever you say. And they start to get to work on opening the cages. Scientist is screaming, telling them to stop. Like, hey, you don't know what you're doing. He goes, the infection is in their blood and saliva. One bite, he gets cut off because here comes our heister opening up one of the cages. Monkey is overjoyed to see that the door is open now and rushes towards the opening, jumps out of the cage and onto the woman. One of the other dudes fights the monkey off her, but she's covered in blood. She turns over. She starts coughing up blood herself and even spits some onto her fellow heister. Scientist is screaming, like, we have to kill her. We have to kill her now because she is now infected. Yep. And you can see why. She's starting to twitch. She's growling. Blood is dripping from her mouth. Her eyes have turned a nice bright red. Really nice, pretty red color.
No.
Right? She attacks the scientists. The monkeys are going insane in their cages. And then we just cut to black.
All right. I'm here.
Yeah. We are absolutely here, aren't we?
I really thought that we just met our little buddies for the whole movie. I have a feeling they didn't make it out of there. She didn't, clearly.
You might be right.
Oh, God. Okay.
In fades, white, simple font, 28 days later, ...
Oh, I'm excited to, like, put together why it's titled that. I have no idea. Wait. Wait, help. Caitlin. No, we have to keep that in.
We really
do. We have to keep that in. I hate it for myself, but we have to keep that in.
I just literally stopped. Like, I was like,
a title card. It's the title card for the movie. And then I was like, wait, it's literally telling us that now we're going 28 days later.
Listen, it's both.
I retire. I need to retire right now.
It is both the title card and an explanation as to what is happening. So now this next section of the film is one of my favorite parts, just due to like the insane eeriness that we experience here. So we're with a man in a hospital room, a man played by Cillian Murphy. Mm-hmm. He seems to be waking up. Now, while this is not pertinent to the plot, I have to mention this. Cillian's dick is out in the wide open in this scene.
Oh, it's one of those movies.
It is one of those movies. And I was like, oh, hello. He's completely in the nude in the hospital bed. And the weird thing here is that it's so quiet. We're in a hospital. We don't hear a thing or see anyone but Cillian. He gets up. He puts on some clothes, some light blue tealish scrubs. Thank you, Cillian, for that. And starts wandering around the hospital. Absolutely no one is here, and the hospital is completely trash. We're talking furniture turned over, trash everywhere, dead silence. Tries to make a call on the phone. Phone lines are all dead. And he's really calm. He's really calm through this whole thing. He's not freaking out. He's just like, oh, looking around like, hello? Oh, no one's here.
Could not be me.
Exactly. I'm like, why are you so chill right now? I have no idea.
Yeah.
He even goes over to a pile of sodas scattered on the floor around a vending machine, and he plops down and has a Pepsi. I mean, he seems quenched. He seems like he's very thirsty, but I don't know. I feel like I'd be a little more concerned. He packs That's himself.
Like the ultimate Pepsi ad. Like, you wake up, you don't know what's going on, you still need that Pepsi.
You know what? I gotta wonder if that was like, I don't know how prominent product placements were back then, but you're right, that would be a great ad.
It's gotta be. Pepsi had to pay money for that.
Absolutely. He even packs himself a little goodie bag of sodas. He just grabs a plastic bag and like grabs soda off the ground and puts it in a bag and just like walks out of the hospital. And I'm like, honestly, if I saw free soda on the floor, I probably would grab some too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't really blame him for that. Now, this next part is so striking to me, and I think about it all the time, because we're outside now and everything is completely still and dead quiet. We are on the streets of London and he's just wandering around and no one is here. And we're not talking just close-up shots, like we've got far shots of London that are just completely dead quiet. You don't see anybody but Cillian's character walking down the street. We even get a shot of him on the bridge, Westminster Bridge, right next to Big Ben. Completely empty. And you're thinking to yourself, how did they...
Yeah, did they just clear out, or is it like CGI everything out like crazy?
Well, because the thing is, like, you're like, oh, it's got to be CGI, but it's not. It was all done on location, and they were able to film these shots in London from about 4 to 5 a.m. and they like just shut off some streets real quick, and they would just have an hour to film some quick shots. And it like it looks so good because it just looks so genuinely real.
Oh, I love that they did it that way. That's cool.
Yeah, I really respect that. So this goes on for a while. Empty streets, iconic landmarks, extreme stillness, and quite frankly, again, Cillian Murphy acting way too calm. He's really just strolling. He's like, this is weird. We get the occasional, hello?
No one's here.
Nobody is here, and you're really calm about it. So next thing we know, Cillian walks into a church. I don't know if he hasn't been in a while and he feels he must pray, but he walks into a church. He's slowly meandering up the balcony when we pan up and we see that the pews are full of bodies. Just bodies on bodies on bodies.
Okay.
In the pews, which is really pretty. It's really nice.
That's an image.
It sure is. He decides to call out once again with a classic, hello? And two heads in the sea of bodies pop up in a bit of a frantic, uneasy sort of way and just stare at him.
Absolutely not. Wait, like fast pop-ups or slow?
Very fast.
Ew.
Very sudden, just like bloop, here I am. And they stare him down. I hate it. Dude, it's awful. Then we hear some noise off to the side, and then a priest bursts through the set of double doors. He honestly doesn't seem so great, though. He's making some breathy sounds, some coffee sounds. He's staggering forward. He starts picking up speed toward Cillian, reaching out for him. And you're like, oh, Cillian, maybe do something. Do
Time
anything.
Time to get some urgency.
Let's move. So what does Cillian do? He whips out his goodie bag of soda cans and just whacks this priest in the side of the head. And then the funny thing here is he starts repeating to himself, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. Which, like, I don't know if he's worried about going to heaven, but this priest has got red freaking eyes, so I think he's going to be okay.
Exactly. That's not a priest anymore, buddy.
You're going to be just fine. Cillian starts to make a run for it out of the church. Now, suddenly there's a ton of these zombie-like creatures chasing after him. And these zombies, Cassie, they can run.
No, I don't like the running zombies.
They can run.
Wait, have you seen Train to Busan?
It's on my list. I have not seen it yet. I'm so excited.
That's all I'm going to say. I'm not even going to say anything about it. You know why I don't like that movie, and it's coming in here, and I'm scared.
Ooh, okay, I'm excited. So suddenly, we're running down the street. We've got, again, zombie-like creatures. We'll get to this more in a minute. Chasing after him, and you're seeing Molotov cocktails start flying through the air. And they're hitting the zombies. And we've got, you know, big bursts of flames. And we come to realize there are two individuals throwing these weapons and calling for Cillian to follow them. So he's screaming and asking for answers. But, you know, we're kind of busy at the moment. So these two new friends are like, can you shut up? Like, let us take care of this. And then we'll talk in a minute, bud. So we finally reach a safe space. We hunker down in what looks like a little convenience store. So now we learn that Cillian has a name, and it's Jim.
Okay,
Jim is his name. Yes, Jim. And he tells us that he had been a bike carrier and he was hit by a car. He's now just waking up. So he had been in a coma for quite a while now. And so he's really confused as to what is happening.
Oh my God. Yeah. Do we find out like how long exactly he was in a coma?
I don't think so. But
okay, it just matters that it was pre-everything.
It was pre-everything, exactly.
That is terrifying.
Right? He's
also, I'm just going to let it happen. I'm like, was there's still meds being administered? Like,
right.
How is he good? The zombies, thank God, didn't find, zombie-like creatures didn't find him.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
I know. Rough. That is a weird point. I'm like, he was in an overturned hospital, but his body was just in this bed still.
I mean, it's horror. You just gotta let it happen.
Oh, believe me, we're gonna let some things happen in this film.
Oh boy.
We certainly are. So his new buddies that we've met are Mark and Selena. We have a woman and a man, Mark and Selena. And Selena decides maybe we should fill Jim in on the state of London. You know, it might benefit him. She explains that it began with rioting. There was a virus, an infection that was spreading through blood. And by the time anything was being done about it, it was too late. The last she knew, when broadcasts were still live, there had been reports of infection in Paris and New York. But that was it. Since then, radio silence, literally. And Mark tells Jim that he's the first uninfected person they've seen in 6 days.
Oh, okay.
So he's now like, oh, okay. So there's infected. And why I keep saying zombie-like is, like, people don't like when you call these creatures zombies because they are not undead. They are infected humans. So that's why I say zombie-like, because I called them zombies and it was a mistake. And I got yelled at.
Oh, I feel that. That happened to me with The Last of Us. Like, they literally are called infected. Like, right. Right? And so they're like, if you say zombies in the Last of Us community, everyone's like, they're not zombies, because it's like the same deal.
Exactly.
Got it.
Jim is understandably having a hard time understanding this. He's asking where the government is, where are the police, where is everybody's families? He's kind of not getting it, because he's like, well, of course there's a government. There's always a government. Where are they? They're like, no, like, they're not here. So he decides he's going to demand to go find his family. Selena and Mark are like, bro, they're definitely dead.
Yeah.
But he insists. He says he's going to find them. So Mark and Selena give in. Mark agrees with a nice, we'll all go and find your dead parents together then. It's like, ooh. So off they go.
That's hard. That's hard. I feel like that would be my instinct too. I would need to like see it to believe it. I would 100% be like, no, they're probably out there somewhere.
Right. Exactly. No, you kind of get both sides of it here, because Jim like just woke up, is experiencing all of this all at once, whereas Mark and Selena, they've been there, they've seen it, so.
Yeah, they've got, like, the time to process.
Exactly. So we get a nice little walking montage and eventually find ourselves at Jim's parents' house. So we walk in, and as Jim starts to ascend the stairs, he quickly covers his nose and mouth as though he smells something not so pleasant.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Jim barges into his parents' room, where we see two decaying bodies in the bed. There's an array of pills and wine on the bedside table, so suggesting maybe they made this choice.
Yeah.
Maybe they saw what was happening and they made the choice.
In a very morbid way, at least they're also like together. That's exactly. Nice, I guess.
And like didn't have to go through that infection transition. Yes,
exactly.
Jim notices that his parents are lying in bed and like they are dead, but they are embraced. They are in an embrace.
Oh, no.
I know, dude. It's like kind of devastating. Yeah. And Jim notices in his mother's hand is a photo of a little boy. Presumably Jim. And on the back of the photo, this is written. Jim, with endless love, we left you sleeping. Now we're sleeping with you. Don't wake up. Like, that is such, like, that hits.
It does hit. Oh my God. And like, also just the emotion there is obviously huge. And it's just like a lot to process. But also them being like, don't wake up, and now he's standing there reading that and being like, well, here I am.
Here I am, woke up from my coma. Okay.
That sucks.
So the sun is setting now, so they decide the best thing to do is spend the night at Jim's parents, and Jim is obviously like pretty somber and sad and quiet. Mark and Selena are asleep while Jim wanders the house reminiscing by candlelight. He's watching a home movie. He's like looking at his mom's cookbooks and looking at photos.
It just keeps going.
I know. It's actually so devastating. So he's watching this home movie when this super bizarre jump scare occurs. And I have to explain to you how these zombie jump scares happen, because I've never seen jump scares quite like this.
Ooh.
Essentially, Jim is like standing in the living room and we see a shot from like far outside the house, but you can see like the candle flickering in the window.
Okay.
And then we follow these zombies in complete silence as they sprint towards Jim. So it's like a quiet moment before like the loud bang hits, like when they burst through.
Yeah.
It's really hard to explain because it's a super bizarre, like I've never seen anything like this. It's just, it's like this slow motion, but also fast and quiet, like sprint.
A silent sprint does not sound appealing. Like, it sounds so creepy. I don't think I've ever seen just even that element of it.
Exactly.
I don't think I've seen something like that.
Yeah. It's a very, I don't know. They use this a few times. So it's just like a weird kind of special thing that they have, I guess.
Yeah.
So two infected come crashing into the house via the porch door and some kind of skylight simultaneously, and they both land right on Jim.
And it's just saliva. It's just saliva that
saliva
gets you
and
infected.
Blood. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Right.
Okay.
They've got Jim pinned to the ground when Mark and Selena come running in, and they are swift. Selena takes one out with a machete, and Mark takes the other out with a knife.
Oh, like, my God.
They know what they're doing. They're pretty badass. Before any other words are exchanged, Selena demands to know immediately if Jim was bitten. She's just like, were you bitten? Were you bitten? Will not listen to anything else until he answers that question.
Valid.
He says no. She then asks if any blood got in his mouth. He says no again. So it seems like we're chilling with Jim over here. All is well. Although I have to say, he's covered in blood and I'm like, how do they know? Kind of looks like he could have been infected.
I'd be like paranoid just being touched. I'd be like, okay, like what if there's saliva on their hand and I don't even know, like if it's you know what I mean?
Right. So like, I guess it's like it has to get into your bloodstream. So it would have to go into your mouth or something. Like it would have to get into your body.
So that's why the bite is important, because you need to like pierce the skin.
Mm-hmm. Or, and that's also why she asked if any blood got in his mouth.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's another way to enter, I guess.
I'd still be paranoid.
I know, like, right?
I don't know. Maybe it did. I don't know.
Uh-huh. So now we cut to Mark. He's got a pretty big gash in his arm. And he's bleeding out of it. And he's covered in blood.
Oh.
Selena gives him a look with a gentle, Mark. He looks back at her with concerned eyes as he says, wait. Not a second later, Selena whips out her machete and starts violently hacking away at Mark until he falls silent.
Stop. Oh, do we know, like, was the relationship between them established? Like, were they together? Were they, like, siblings? Like, anything like that?
It seems like they're just two people that found each other.
Okay. Damn, though. Like, even then, it's like, you have to be so... I don't think I could... I genuinely don't think I could ever, like... stab someone. I don't know if I could even shoot, like if it came down to self-defense or like I need to protect myself and like, oh my god, I don't even know if I have the guts to shoot somebody, like let alone bring a machete out or a knife out or anything like that. So brutal.
And again, she's so like just so ruthless about it, just immediately, like there is no time. He says wait and she just goes boom.
I know, the gone. Wait, oh my god. It's, I mean, you have to be, that's why she's still here. You got to be cold.
Exactly. So what's interesting about Mark's death is that it is debated among fans whether or not he was infected. We don't know for sure.
An open wound doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. We saw the gash. We don't know where it came from. We saw him covered in blood, but was it his blood? Was it someone else's blood? We don't know. Most people agree that likely he was, because that gash was open and there was a lot of blood flying around. But one thing's for sure, Selena, not taking any chances. Wouldn't even let him speak.
Can't falter.
So Selena and Jim head out again. And while they're walking, Selena tells Jim that you have between 10 and 20 seconds to kill someone once they become infected.
Wow.
She says, doesn't matter if it's your friend, your brother, your sister, your parents, you must act.
Oh, no. I fear... Did she... Are we going to find out that she had to kill her family because, or if that's just head, that's just my, I'm putting a whole character together right now, you know, based on what you're talking, like how you're describing her. And she just is giving like tough, badass, but like that has been through crazy shit and is like actually like suppressing a lot of emotional feelings. But that's me. I'll put like depression on any character I come across. Like I'll just like read into their psychology and it's just not even a thing.
So she follows this with, just so you know where you stand, if it happens to you, I'll do it in a heartbeat. It's kill or be killed for her. She continues saying that Mark had plans and questions if Jim does as well. She says, do you want us to find a cure and save the world or just fall in love and fuck? Plans are pointless. Staying alive is as good as it gets. So you really, like, you understand her character's kind of at least surface level motivation here, and it's to live. And, like, she's not really getting much enjoyment out of anything. She's just here to survive.
I think she probably was at one point that person who wanted to, like, get this shit done and save the world. And I think she's just been beat down so much that she's like, no, I've seen too much. I've been through too much. It's pointless. Like...
Right.
This is the way you stay alive. Like, don't have any hopes. Just try to keep breathing.
So they stop walking when Jim spots something in the distance. It's an apartment about the 15th floor or so, decked out in flashing Christmas lights. So naturally, we're going to head over there, right?
Of course.
We got to go see what's up over there.
Time to party.
Christmas party. I'm down. Like, let's go. So we arrive at the apartment building and we're on our way up the stairs when we hear infected. Down near the bottom of the staircase. Panic and chaos ensues. So we're sprinting up the stairs. Selena's ahead of Jim, and Jim is screaming for her to wait for him. She doesn't.
Of course not.
She's looking out for herself. She's going up first. She rounds another flight of stairs to see a fairly large man decked out in protective gear holding a shield. Selena and Jim are taken aback because, hello, who are you? What is happening? He shouts, down the corridor, flat 157, move. He stands aside to let them pass. And so, okay, he's a friendly.
Yeah.
We're cool. Yeah, we're cool. So we see the mystery man take out a bunch of infected on his own. He just boom, boom, boom. Selena and Jim get to flat 157 and are pounding and screaming on the door. And we hear a little girl's voice on the other side asking, where's dad?
Oh no. Also, what do you mean a little girl? Like, I can't with the kids.
Right? Once mystery man is through kicking ass, he screams back down the hall, let them in, Hannah. So now we're all in the apartment. And a random little detail that I love here. So we can hear Frosty the Snowman playing in this apartment, like a very twinkly version. It's just like we get in there, like we were just fighting off these infected, and now we're just like, Frosty the Snowman. Like, it's such a contrast. It's
amazing.
Very jarring, but yeah. We love it. It's kind of like a little bit of comedic relief in a way.
Yeah.
So Mystery Man introduces himself as Frank and Hannah as his daughter. We don't know exactly how old Hannah is, but the actress portraying her is 15 at the time, around 15. So we think she seems like she might be a little bit younger, maybe like 13, 14, but somewhere in that range. And Frank's excited. He's a happy fella. He's like, wow, this is great. We've got more people. He helps Jim and Selena to feel very welcome. He decides it's like cause for celebration, grabs the creme de menthe. And the good glasses, and this is a time for a party. He's extremely welcoming. He's super sweet. It's all very cute.
I don't like sweet people. They die.
I know, right?
I'm so scarred. We watch too many horror movies.
Oh, I know, right? You're immediately like, and you're gonna die. He offers a spare room to Selena and Jim, and everyone is off to bed. Selena and Jim are in a room having a little chat. Jim asks Selena, what do you think of them? Selena replies with, well, they're desperate. Probably need us more than we need them. Again, all business. Frank opened his home to them, was very kind, very sweet. And that's what she has to say. Well, they need us. Jim sits down and politely says, I think they're good people. She responds with, good people? Well, that's nice, but you should be more concerned with whether they're going to slow you down. Jim says, right, because if they slowed you down, and she interrupts with, I'd leave them behind. Jim says, in a heartbeat. Selena says, yeah. Jim says, I wouldn't. Selena, her final line here is, then you're going to wind up getting yourself killed. In this moment, you see the difference in their characters, at least on the surface. Jim comes off as very human, very caring, while Selena's practical survivalist. And I think for me, like, I think a lot of this comes from the fact that Selena's been living this for a month while Jim's been here a few days. So she might have been like that the first few days, but now she's seen shit and she's had to protect herself, so she can't be back in that headspace. Like, Jim can't possibly understand what she's seen.
That's exactly my read on her. Do you think that's what anyone would become after so long? Or do you think it has to do with personality at the same time? Like, would you be that person after a month of seeing all of this?
I really want to sit here and say no, but I feel like I would. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I think while personality does, you know, play a part, like your character does, if you're fighting people off constantly and trying to save your life constantly, and like, I don't know, like, how could you not end up like that?
Yeah. I think for me, it would be like, if my family is gone, I would be that person.
Right.
If I still had them, I'd probably still have hope.
I think that's a great point.
Which actually, that like also would make sense for Frank because he still has his kid.
Yes.
So he's like, we can do this.
Exactly. And we'll come back to that a little bit later.
Oh, dear.
So after this exchange, it's like a little tense and they have a little mini stare down before Jim admits that he knows he'd likely be dead without Selena. Selena kind of shrugs it off and heads to bed. The next morning, Frank whips out a little wind-up radio and he tells everybody to listen. So he winds up this radio and then we start to hear a signal coming through. We hear a voice. It claims as follows. The answer to infection is here. We are soldiers. There are survivors here. Our location is the 42nd blockade, M602, 27 miles northeast of Manchester. So we got to go, right?
Of course.
Right.
I mean, yeah, because it can't be a trap because, like, these zombie creatures can't talk. So, like,
exactly.
Yeah, this feels safe. Well, being there feels safe. Getting there, I don't know, that might be a little tough.
Right. And that's kind of where Frank's coming from. He explains that he's wanted to go, but he was afraid to go just him and Hannah because he was like, if something happens to me and Hannah ends up alone out there, like, I don't like it. So like, they've just been living in this apartment building, you know, way up on a high floor, just hunkered down there. But now that they have two more people, he's like, want to go check it out? Like, what do we have to lose, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
But arguments do break out here. Selena doesn't want to go. She's skeptical that these people are even still alive because the broadcast is a repeated recording. So she's like, what if they're dead? They might be dead. And Frank and Jim feel it's worth it. Selena states, we could die trying to get there. This is where Hannah actually speaks up and she says, or die here.
She's not wrong.
Exactly. I'm like, you know what? You're right. Like, why not? What do you have to lose? Your life? Yeah, but you're not living a quality life here.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same worry whether you're here or there.
Exactly. She kind of goes off here saying how we need each other right now. We aren't safe here, so let's see if the soldiers can keep us safe. And Jim's like, all right, fine. So how are we going to get there? Next shot, here comes a taxi driving out of the garage. We've got taxi transport.
Oh.
It's been decided we're going to go see if we can find the soldiers and reach the cure to infection in what appears to be Frank's taxi. So it's kind of a cute little moment. Like, we're just driving along. We've got some Ave Maria-esque music playing in the background, by the way. Like, there's this, like, very, like, just think that kind of music plays a lot throughout this next portion of the film. Frank cracks a joke. Like, he's having a good time. Selena doesn't laugh. She's not amused. We're driving by many dead bodies on the street. It's great. It's a fun time. So we're driving and we reach a tunnel and we face a decision here. Do we take the short direct route, aka the dark underground tunnel, or do we go the long way all above ground? Which way are you going?
Oh, dear. Okay. I probably would go the long way. If we got the gas and the tank, I'd go the long way because, I mean, we're not in a rush.
Right. We got time.
Yeah, I think.
So you're siding with Jim here. That's what Jim wants to do. Jim wants to take the long route. He wants to play it safe. Selena is like, let's just get it over with. Let's just go through the tunnel.
That checks out for their characters.
Yep. And Frank's like, you know what? Let's just do it. So he starts to drive into the tunnel.
Oh, no. They're just going to get swarmed. Okay, I'm ready.
So we get into the tunnel and it's dark and we're seeing some dead bodies, you know, strewn along the ground. We see stalled cars, we see trash, broken glass, and Jim starts going off. He's like, I told you, like, this isn't where we should be.
He's so me.
Right? And he's getting so bad. And Frank decides to prove a point or something here because he goes full steam ahead into this tunnel. This is what I was talking about earlier. I'm going to need you to wildly suspend your belief for a second here.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, good, because here we go. Frank drives his little taxi over, yes, over wreckage of cars. We are driving over parked cars like a monster truck.
Okay.
And then it doesn't make sense, but here we are. We're having a great time. Everybody's acting like we're on a roller coaster. Everybody's laughing and we're like just driving over the cars. It's great. It's cute. It's cute, but it also
until
like makes...
what? Until what?
Everything's fine and dandy until
oh no.
A tire blows out. We're all shocked.
Of course. We're
driving over cars and glass in our little taxi. And yeah, the tire blows out.
Of course, yeah.
Tensions are high now because we were like laughing and giggling. Now we're mad. Now everybody's pissed again. And I mean, except Frank because he's just happy to be alive. You know him.
Yeah.
So they get out to work on the tire and we hear a sound in the distance. And it's a weird sound. Like that we haven't heard before.
They make sounds. It's one of them. They make sounds.
Well, no. Here we go.
Okay.
We hear a scuttly sound. It's high-pitched and scuttly. It's a herd of rats come speeding down the tunnel from the direction we were heading. And it's like, oh, ew, gross. But then Selena has a moment of realization where she says, they're running from the infected. Of course they are, right? So we're panicking. We're trying to change this tire as fast as possible. Everyone's yelling, including the infected, as they come barreling down the tunnel. And I'm sure you guessed this, but we cut this real close, like we do in every sequence like this in a horror film. We're fixing that tire, hopping in the car as the infected slam themselves into the glass of the car. And they're swarming. And we get some like creepy close-ups here. Like nasty infected faces with like red eyes up against the glass. It's very jarring.
Wait, I have a question about the red eyes. So is it like, are they glowing? Are they just like normal eyes but red? Is it full red, completely taken over everywhere inside there? Like,
so it's not glowing. I would say it's more like red, like the whites are red and you don't have an iris, but you do have a pupil.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
So it's pretty intense and it's gritty. But as we get away, we're hooting and hollering again. We're having a good time again. Frank lets out a goodbye, you fuckers. It's honestly so good.
Yeah.
So we get out of the tunnel. We're on the road again. We're driving down a street when Selena tells Frank to stop the cab. She's just like, Frank, stop the cab. It's like, oh, I don't know why. But she walks up to this building, heads inside. It is a fully stocked grocery store.
Oh my God. Where's the Pop-Tarts?
Literally. Oh my God. We're going to get to this in a second. This scene is amazing because it's a cute, fun little song playing in the background while the four of them grab shopping carts and they're running around the store like children, grabbing tons of food. It's just like cute moments. Frank gets excited to show Jim the good liquor and grabs four bottles of it to take with them. And as they're heading out the door, Frank just straight up leaves his credit card at the checkout. And it's just a cute little detail. Like, he's like, yeah, you can take my money. That doesn't mean anything anymore. Yeah. So he's paying, kind of. But this scene immediately sparked in me, like, a childhood fantasy I used to have of being trapped in a grocery store overnight. Because I would have the excuse to just eat whatever I wanted. Because I'd be like, well, I was trapped and I needed to eat. So I would eat the Gushers and I would eat the fruit roll-ups and I would eat the cookies and the chips.
Oh, my God. That's so real. I had a very similar fantasy as a kid, but for me it was the mall and it was the food court.
Ooh, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's fun. For me it was always grocery store or furniture store. I don't know, I thought being trapped in a furniture store would be so much fun.
Jump on the beds,
literally. Oh my God, play house and like all the little setups. Oh my God.
I could see that. That's so true.
Mm-hmm. So after a cute little fun grocery store moment, we're on the road again. And our next stop, a gas station. Well, not quite a gas station. We found a gas truck and it's parked in a parking lot of some sort of diner convenience store. We can't really tell exactly what it is, but we're in the middle of nowhere. We're not in the city anymore. We've gotten out of the city at this point, which is good. Frank and Selena work on getting some gas for the car. So they're like trying to siphon the gas out of the gas truck. Hannah stays in the taxi and Jim decides to go check what's in this building.
I'm sure a zombie-like creature.
Yeah, right? Like, let's go check out the dark building, Jim. Let's go.
Yeah.
Why not? So he walks in and immediately, once again, covers his nose in his mouth, which is always a great sign.
Oh, yeah.
And there are just lots of dead bodies. What else could you expect, right? And this part is, like, honestly a little disturbing because, like I said, the dead bodies are just like, eh. And we get a close-up of a baby, like, in its mother's arms. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh, unnecessary.
Put that away.
Literally, put that away.
It's so unnecessary. I'm like, please, I don't want to see that.
Oh, valid.
But then one of those jump scares happens again. We see the silent sprinting zombie going for Jim before it collides with him and makes some like crazy hissing and breathing noises. When we see the infected, we realize this is a child.
Okay.
I know. We even hear the child mutter, I hate you, in like a very zombie-like voice, which is super interesting because at no point have we heard them say anything.
I was going to say, I didn't know that they could do that.
Right. It's definitely there, but it's not super prominent. I didn't notice it till someone told me it was there.
Oh,
like the first time I watched it, I didn't hear it. But if you like go back, you're like, oh, absolutely. That child is saying, I hate you.
Weird.
Which is like really weird. In order to protect himself in this moment, Jim kills the child.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see it happen.
Oh, good.
But he like, you know, like essentially kind of like swings back and then we cut to the next thing. And he walks out of the building and Selena's like, hey, did you find anything in there? And he says no. He doesn't want to talk about it. So like he keeps this interaction to himself.
Sure.
Just
makes
like,
sense.
Fair enough. So we fill up the cab with gas and again, on the road. Here we go again. We got to get there eventually, hopefully, right? So our next stop, we come upon a gorgeous open field with ruins of old stone buildings. And here we decide we're going to have a picnic with our food from the grocery store. Like,
you know what? Let's do it.
Let's have another nice, fun, light moment. Like, there is a lot of light moments in this film, which is kind of nice considering how dark some of the other moments are.
Absolutely.
And here they even come across some horses frolicking in the fields, and Hannah turns to her dad and she says, "Do you think they're infected?" And her father replies saying, "Nah, they're doing just fine." And it's just like a really hopeful little moment, and it stands out to me. And Frank, before he leaves, he turns, he blows a kiss to the horses, and then they go back to their picnic. And it's just really precious.
Yeah, to see like life in the middle of all of the darkness.
Exactly. It's just
that's really
know.
Nice.
It's really, it's just, this movie is like, it just plays with your emotions a lot because it's so dark and then it's so sweet. And you're like, where am I? What is happening? So now we're with Selena and Jim, who are just kind of out for a stroll in the field together. And they're having a little bit of a sentimental chat about life. And Selena admits out loud, she says that she was wrong. Selena recognizes that all this death and all this shit around them doesn't matter nearly as much to Frank and Hannah because Hannah's got her dad and Frank's got his daughter.
Yes.
You called that. Exactly. You called that one. Yep.
Oh my God. I get her. And I'm still like, I don't know if you're withholding this still, but I feel like something went down with her and her family and she's been jaded ever since. And now she's seeing them and she's like, oh, that's really not.
Yeah, and we see in the background here like Frank and Hannah playing, like just having a moment where they're playing together. Yeah. It's just like she's looking at it and she's like, they're still living life.
It's nice that she sees that and she like admires it versus like having that jealousy or annoyance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. She says, "I was wrong when I said staying alive is as good as it gets." And there's a beat here and Selena quickly leans over and gives Jim a kiss on the cheek.
I like
very,
that.
Like, oh, they're kind of okay. There's a cute little vibe between them now. So now we cut to nighttime and we're all trying to get to sleep by the fire, except Selena, because she's already fast asleep while the other three are tossing and turning. They're complaining to one another about how they can't fall asleep and wonder how the heck Selena was able to so easily. So Jim leans over and wakes her up, which honestly kind of rude. Like,
kind of rude.
Bro, kind of rude. Like, she was fast asleep. She was enjoying her sleep.
I'd be mad.
I know. Selena wakes up and Jim says, "How are you able to get to sleep?" Girlie reaches over and grabs a giant pouch of drugs. She is stocked up. She throws some Valium to Jim, who says,
Valium? No, when you said that, I was like, I can't judge because every once in a while I got to pop my ibuprofen PM so I can get some night. And then you're like, Valium.
Yeah. She throws the Valium over to Jim and Jim's like, "Yo, not only will we be able to get to sleep, but if we're attacked in the middle of the night, we won't even care."
You know what? It's smart. I'd rather, if I'm going to go, might as well be dead asleep.
So Jim's down, he wants to take two. Frank refuses, and Hannah has to beg her father to allow her to take any. And finally, Frank's like, "Fine, you can have half of one." So off to sleep, they all go. Next morning, back on the road again, you know us. We gotta find those soldiers sometime soon, right? Like, this has been a bit of a journey. We're driving down the highway when we see Manchester far up ahead. We're not going to Manchester, but we're going pretty close to Manchester, except the entire city is up in flames.
Oh,
it's a bit depressing. They recognize that, well, there's probably no fire crews and the fire's just gonna keep spreading, but onward we go. Before you know it, we have done it. We've reached the 42nd blockade. We are here.
I thought we were gonna lose someone before we got here,
right?
I'm impressed.
Frank drives the car up and it's quite desolate. No real signs of anything happening, which we don't love to see. We were hoping to like come up and see a ton of people, but we don't. Everyone gets out, starts exploring, and there are makeshift tents around. There's vehicles, but no people. Oh. And Selena starts to get nervous. She's uncomfortable. She says, "I don't like this. I think we should go." Frank is stern. He's not going anywhere because, like he says, there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Go where? Where do you want to go, Selena? So frustrated, Frank storms off on his own to continue exploring, leaving Selena, Hannah, and Jim behind. And he's just like, you can tell he's feeling really defeated and really upset because like he was really hoping to find something here. He sits down to kind of think to himself and he hears a crow up above. And he looks up and there's a crow up there sitting upon a pole, but not really a pole because it's really a dead body that this bird is perched upon. And it's just kind of up there. Like in some kind of like rafters of sorts. Frank wants the crow gone, so he yells at it. He's like, "Just go away, go away." The crow doesn't listen. The crow doesn't give a shit. So Frank gets up, he goes over, and he kicks the pole to try and scare away the bird. The kick's successful. The bird flies away.
But?
but the kick disturbs the dead body, releasing a single drop of blood that falls directly into Frank's eye.
Oh no. I was like, oh, I'm so happy they got here. Just kidding. I mean, technically they made it, but of course. Okay. That sucks. And it's Frank. Like, he's like the happy-go-lucky. Like, we can do this. He's like the morale booster.
He really is. He's so lovable.
Okay. Yeah.
So Frank quickly grabs at his face, but you can tell he knows, like, this isn't good. Mm-hmm. And then Hannah appears and asks. I know. I'm so sorry. Hannah appears and asks if her father's all right. He replies with, Hannah, I love you very much. And then he quickly urges her to step back, to stay away from him. Hannah's concerned and she continues to approach her father to see, like, what's going on. Mm-hmm. Frank has, like, an insane outburst and grabs Hannah aggressively while repeating, keep away from me, keep away from me, keep away from me. Mm-hmm. Now Hannah's screaming and terrified and she starts crying. Frank keeps chanting, keep away. Like, he just keeps saying this over and over as he's starting to get, like, clearly very angry and visibly is beginning to lose control of his body as it twitches and sways. Hannah's screaming for her dad and Frank's hissing and growling now. In all of this hustle and bustle, Jim and Selena come running over. Selena grabs Hannah to hold her back and starts yelling at Jim to kill Frank. Mm-hmm. Jim's frozen.
That would be me.
Right? He's really unsure, like, if he can do this. Hannah's begging them not to kill Frank as Frank's condition is rapidly getting worse. Remember, Selena said, you got 10 to 20 seconds before things get too out of control.
Yeah.
So Jim finally decides that he has to do this. He has to kill Frank. So he swings his bat back. But before he can make contact with Frank, we hear gunshots ring out. And Frank is shot dead with lots of bullets, let me tell you.
Oh, wow.
Many, many bullets.
So the soldiers are here.
Yeah. The soldiers emerge from the woods and tell everyone to stay away from Frank. Hannah lets out one last dad before we cut to the next scene.
Yep.
It's
Let's cut to the next scene.
They're like, okay, great. That was fun.
Oh, that's hard. Poor girl. That's their daughter now. Like, yep. Jim and Selena.
I know, right? And now she is your responsibility.
Yep.
I was going to ask you, would you kill Frank? But it sounds like you would kind of freeze.
I think initially I would. Like, it wouldn't be an immediate instinct to be like, okay, I got to do this and go for it in, like, Selena fashion. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. We don't have guns.
No.
I don't think I could slash someone up. Like, I don't think I could do that. I think I'd be pretty 50-50 with a gun. Like, just, like, close my eyes and pull the trigger and be like, okay, it's over. So, yeah, I'd be lucky with the soldiers in that situation.
Right. I agree. Like, I think my first instinct would be to grab the two of them and just start running. Like, let's just get away from Frank instead of killing him. Because I don't think I could do it, even though it probably would be the right choice to make in that situation.
Yeah.
So Selena, Jim, and Hannah are now in a vehicle with the soldiers headed somewhere new. And, you know, you can see one of the soldiers speaking over a walkie-talkie or a radio of some sort saying, three survivors, one male, two female. I repeat, one male, two female. So he's reporting back, we have some survivors and we're going to bring them back to the camp.
Okay.
It's a quiet and somber ride, obviously. We're sitting there with Frank's death on our mind. It's like just a very heavy moment. After about a 15-minute drive, a vehicle pulls up to what appears to be a pretty established camp. We've got a building. We've got some big grounds. It's like, okay, and there's people here. There's soldiers here. And we are introduced to Major Henry West. He clearly runs things here. And we see that Frank was right. People are here. Soldiers are here. And it's like, at least Frank knew that we needed to come here.
Exactly. Like, that gives his death some purpose. I don't know. Like, it would have just sucked if he just died and this was his whole idea and then it just came to nothing.
Right.
Like, at least now, especially, like, his daughter is hopefully in a safe place thanks to him.
Exactly. So Henry lets them know, like, we've got clean beds here. We've got a boiler that produces hot water. And he jokes that, like, they really could use a shower, so they should go do that. He's a funny fella. So they all clean up. And this is, like, kind of a weird moment. Hannah manages to fall asleep. I don't know how, after what they just experienced. An hour later, she's taking a nap.
Just becomes a Valium addict, and then the movie ends.
Yeah, right. And scene.
Don't do drugs, kids.
So Jim and Selena are having an emotional moment where Jim insists that Hannah will be fine because she's tough and she's strong. She'll cope, he says. Selena actually begins to cry and says she doesn't want Hannah to have to cope. I want her to be okay, she says. It feels like a bit of a role reversal here, kind of, because Jim's being the stronger one while Selena shows her human side a lot more. And it's just kind of nice to see them on the opposite sides of that.
Yeah, it's been cool to see Selena's arc as the movie has gone on.
Right. So now it's time for Jim and Henry to have a little chat alone in the garden. Henry asks Jim if he's disappointed with the little camp they found. Did he expect more based on the broadcast? Jim's like, we were just hoping for, and Henry cuts him off with the answer to infection. Jim looks at him like, well, yeah, I mean, that is kind of what you said in your broadcast, bro. Like, that's what I want. So Henry's like, okay, listen, I'm telling the truth, but the answer to infection, it's going to be a bit different than what you were probably expecting. So Henry decides to show Jim around the base. They've got bombs. They've got trip wires around the base. They've got floodlights that are aimed on the flat fields around so they can see what's coming. They've got high wall. He's very excited about his high walls. They've got high walls. So they're protected. And yeah, that's what matters. But he goes on to say also that rebuilding is going to be really important and they've got to start trying to rebuild society.
Yeah.
They've got hot water. They've got a kitchen. He's like, these are two very essential pieces for civilization. So, you know, we're working on it. So the last stop on the tour of the base is to visit Mailer. We walk into a courtyard where a man is chained up by the neck and he's infected. According to Henry, he's one of their men. He had been infected for 2 days and their intent here is to study what happens to the infected over time. How long until they starve to death? And Mailer's in a pretty poor state. He's, you know, twitching and stuff like the other infected and he's vomiting blood and whatever else. And it's not pretty. Jim seems a little uncomfortable by this, and honestly, so am I. Because this is the part where I have to stop and say, is this simply an infected monster that we can chain up and learn from? Or do you think Mailer, the man, is still in there? And this is actually an incredibly cruel thing to do.
Yeah, that's the thing with like all zombie-esque universes. Sometimes it's like they're gone and just completely gone, nothing behind the eyes. And sometimes they're trapped in there and they just have no control over their body or desires.
Right.
Is there an answer for that in this universe?
I don't think so, honestly. I think it's kind of, you just, it's up to your interpretation.
It's
I could be wrong. 28 Days Later fans, don't come for me. But it's not like super clear to me.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. Like there's just because we have a soul, like you feel bad. Even if it is just a monster now, it wasn't always a monster.
Exactly.
Like, that was a person and now they're being subjected to this. So like it just is hard either way. But
so like I think everybody in that moment is that probably hits everybody in that moment because it just feels wrong. He's dressed in his like, you know, soldier clothes like everybody else around here. But he's chained up. And he's in a bad state. So it's kind
uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable and sad. So anyway, it's dinner time now. And the energy at the dinner table is a little weird because the soldiers are just like, they're a bit much. Like, there's just a group of men and they're loud and they're obnoxious. And they're like, they're at the dinner table, like singing songs. And our three cast members like have just experienced a very traumatic event and are very somber and just like sitting there in silence.
So it's just, like read like, the room a little bit.
Exactly. So their resident tin opener, as they call him, because he's the chef, but really he's a, you know, glorified tin opener.
That's funny.
He has prepared a feast in honor of their guests, which, as you can guess, consists mostly of tinned foods. But he also decided to make an omelet because, you know, it's a special occasion. So Henry takes the first bite of the omelet and declares that the eggs have gone bad. So Henry sits down and looks right at Hannah and says, I don't suppose you can cook, can you? Hannah doesn't even – I know.
Excuse me?
Right?
First of all, child labor. Second of all, I am very aware that there are two women in the room. Well, she's just a girl, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are you trying to say?
Right? So Hannah, like, doesn't even crack a smile at this because, again, like, traumatic day over here. Like, now is not the time
for
this. Like, I'm not amused at all. So the table launches off into some philosophical conversations about the state of the world, infection, what normality is, and, like, whatever else. And suddenly, we see infected running up on the camp. The sirens begin sounding and some of the landmines are going off. Soldiers get up in a hurry and head outside for some infected combat. floodlights come to life, soldiers take their positions, they begin firing like mad on these infected. Mm-hmm. Selena, Hannah, and Jim remain inside. They're just watching through the windows. And there's one soldier in particular in this scene that's quite frankly having a little too good of a time. He's firing as an infected runs into a landmine and flies through the air. And this guy is overjoyed at this sight. He goes, fucking hell, he bounced. I ain't never seen that in my life. And he's laughing and shouting this through smiles.
It's giving like he thinks he's playing a video game.
Right. It just feels super icky because he's like really, I don't know, he's excited to be murdering. And even though like they're monsters, we had that moment with Mailer where we're kind of conflicted on like our feelings toward these creatures slash humans.
Right.
But the infected have been cleared. So the soldiers head back inside and Mr. kind of icky giddy man saunters up to Selena, who's holding her machete. He says, listen, sweetheart, you ain't going to be needing that anymore. He says this as he grabs the machete from her hands and continues with, because you've got me to protect you now.
Ew.
Ew. That's my immediate response.
As soon as he said sweetheart, I was like, oh, what shit is he about to say?
And you're disgusted, right?
Yeah.
Well, it gets worse.
No.
Bro holds this machete up to his crotch and says, if you want to get your hands on a really big chopper, just come and see me.
To cut it off.
Yes!
We got to get our machete back. We have some business to take care of.
We got some business. Exactly. Super shockingly, Selena's not amused by this.
No.
This man decides to grab her aggressively and says, how about right now? So, ew. First of all.
Yep.
And then a little bit of chaos kind of starts ensuing because like he's grabbing at Selena and Jim goes to step in.
Okay.
And then we hear the name Mitchell screamed across the room. Mitchell is Mr. Giddy. Mm-hmm. He's now in trouble. Major Henry tells everyone to get back to work. And so we're left now with just Henry, Selena, and Jim standing in this hallway. Henry hands Selena her machete back, apologizes, and Selena storms off.
Yeah.
Henry asks Jim if he wants to have a drink. Jim agrees. It's been a hell of a day. Like, sure, let's go share a drink. Now, Henry and Jim head off to a private room to share a drink, and Henry starts pressuring Jim, asking him who he's killed up to this point. Jim actually does open up and tell him about the young boy that he had to kill over at the diner. And Henry tells Jim that he understands that it's all about survival, and sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
No, okay. I have a bad feeling. Okay, first of all, when the situation with Mailer, we saw that. Why are they? No, okay. I need to calm down because I'm fearful. I think I know what is happening here. Are they going to try to like use us to test on us like they are with Mailer? Like, is that why they're sending out these broadcasts being like, we have a cure? No, you don't. Because then we showed up and then you're like, well, we're doing studies. Okay, that doesn't mean you have a cure. And now he's saying, well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. No, it's some dark stuff that they're doing here. It's bad.
Interesting.
Oh.
Okay. So this is where... It's funny that you cut me off right there.
Oh, God.
It is so funny. So, because we enjoy a pause here. And let me tell you, we have to enjoy this pause.
Okay.
Enjoy the pause. Enjoy this moment before Henry drops one hell of a line here. He looks Jim dead in the eye and says, I promised them women.
Wait, who is them? His soldiers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jim's confused. He replies with a simple, what? Which is honestly a fitting response in this scenario, because what did you just say to me?
Yeah, my mind is not dark enough to connect these dots. Literally spell it out for me.
Mm-hmm. Spell it out. So Henry offers an explanation. 8 days ago, I found Jones, you know, guess that's a soldier, with a gun in his mouth. Said he was going to kill himself because there was no future. What could I say to him? Really, Henry? What could you say to him? So he continues, what do 9 men do except wait to die themselves? I moved us from the blockade, set the radio broadcast, and I promised them women. He doubles down on that.
It's worse.
It is.
No, it's, oh my God, it's worse than what I thought was already bad enough, like luring people here to do your stupid studies. No, you're just luring people here to literally rape them.
Yeah, this is a turn that no part of me saw coming when I watched this film, because you're like very focused on the infected. And like, you know, you start to get uncomfortable with the soldiers, but still.
Yeah. You're like, no, it's like you think this movie is the ugliness of the zombies, the infected. Mm-hmm. And then it has this whole side of it where it's like the ugliness of men and like what people turn into in these situations.
Yes.
And that's even scarier. Oh, my God.
I know.
Because they're choosing. Like, these infected people are not choosing. It's like an awful situation.
Right.
They aren't choosing to be monsters. You are.
This is a choice that you're making. Exactly. So Jim storms the frick out of that room. And he calls for Selena and is like, we need to leave right now. So they begin to gather their stuff.
I just literally just connect. Oh, my God. I gave them too much credit in my head because I was like, oh, no, Selena. But literally, oh, no, Hannah. Like, I don't trust them to be like, oh, well, she's 13, 14. Like, we won't. Mm-hmm. We'll leave her alone. Oh, dear. Yeah, we need to get out of here.
Uh-huh. So they gather all their stuff and they start to run out of the building. But, of course, yeah, they're stopped before they make it out.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, there's a man here, one of the soldiers. His name is Farrell, and he's actually standing up for them, saying that we need to let them go. Like, we can't keep them here. This isn't right. He has a conscience. It's crazy. But
yeah.
But the soldiers, they're like, no, we're going to take Farrell too now. Now Farrell's. We're just going to lock up Farrell because he doesn't agree with what we're doing.
Oh, my God.
So Jim and Farrell are now locked up in a room together. We don't know where Selena and Hannah are. So this is, I find this part really interesting because Farrell's kind of talking to himself, to Jim, just to the room. Like, he's just kind of rambling. And he's rambling about what's going on in the rest of the world. He makes this comment, starting the world again when the rest of the world hasn't even stopped. Just think about it. How could infection have crossed the oceans? Right now, TVs are playing and planes are flying in the sky and the rest of the world is continuing as fucking normal. Think about it. What would they do with a diseased little island? They quarantined us. So Farrell's either onto something or he's a rambling madman. Considering his state of mind in the last scene, I feel like he might be onto something here.
Yeah.
So that opens a whole new can of worms of, oh, what if this isn't a worldwide situation?
Yeah, it was because it was, I can't remember. It was reported that it was like in New York. Mm-hmm. As well at the beginning.
Yes.
So we're like, that could be a lie and we're just hearing this here.
Right.
And so we don't bother trying to get out because we think everywhere is like this. Yikes.
Yep. 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 So Tin Opener, I still don't know his name. I probably should, but I'm going to call him Tin Opener, walks into the room with Mitchell. Ew.
Yeah.
And tells the two men it's time to go. Go where? We don't know. So the four of them march deep into the woods. Mitchell and Tin Opener hold Jim and Farrell at gunpoint the whole way. So they seem to have reached their final destination when a pile of dead bodies comes into view. So we're here for an execution, and it seems like they may have done this a few times before. So without warning, Tin Opener starts shooting at Farrell, who collapses to the ground, but he startles Mitchell in the process because he doesn't really know what he's doing. He's the cook. He doesn't really understand what's going on. But he scares Mitchell enough that Jim makes a run for it here. But Jim's a smart man, so he just dives into the pile of dead bodies and lays still while Tin Opener and Mitchell like are like, oh, God, where did he go? They've lost him.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell and Tin Opener run off to find him. And when they can't, they decide it's not really worth it because he's probably going to just die out here anyway. Like, he's got no weapons. He's barely got any clothes on at this point. Like, he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Jim runs off into the woods. And as he's running, he trips and falls. And when he falls, he's left facing the sky. And what does he see in the distance? An airplane. So Farrell was right.
Oh, my God.
There's a plane currently flying over Manchester. So there are people out there.
Yeah.
Which they were very much led to believe was not true.
Yeah. I didn't second guess that for a second.
Me neither. So now we head back to hell. We come upon a room where Henry stands with the other soldiers, Selena and Hannah. He tells them that before anything else can happen, they need to make the woman look presentable. Selena begs for them to leave Hannah alone. But of course, they don't give a shit. And fair warning, this is like a little uncomfortable here to anyone who's a little, Henry orders the men to take the woman to the master bedroom to find some nice clothes to wear from the lady who used to live in the house. Her wardrobe is still here. And how do they do this? They forcefully begin ripping off Selena's clothing. while another soldier holds back a crying and screaming Hannah. Selena manages to rip herself away from these men, and she stands staring at them in her bra and her jeans while they just kind of laugh and like mock her a bit. And she glances over at Hannah for a moment, and you can tell like something's like clicked in her head a little bit, because she then runs up to one of the soldiers and starts kissing him.
Oh.
She pulls away and asks the soldiers to leave Hannah and herself alone in the room to change. She kind of demands it. She says, if you want this, you need to leave so we can change. It's only polite. Let us change. And so they kind of agree. They're a little bit like, you know, thrown by this, because like her change is, you know, but they're men and they see what they want. And
want,
they,
yeah.
Exactly. So they are like, okay, fine. As soon as the soldiers exit the room, Selena runs over to her bag of drugs and begs Hannah to take a few Valium.
Oh.
And Hannah says, are you trying to kill me? And Selena says, no, sweetheart, I'm making you not care. Which is like, hurts to your freaking core.
Yeah. Whoa. Because when, with the switch up, I thought she was like ready for an escape plan.
Me too.
But I mean, it's not easy to escape the situation that they're in right now. So this is just heartbreakingly more realistic for her to like, for her brain to go there just to get through it. Okay, so this I like still can't tell if it's actually going to happen or if like we're building this up and they're going to be able to get away. Okay, I'm ready.
So as they're taking the drugs or going to take the drugs, the soldiers barge back in and interrupt them, throwing the pills across the room.
Ugh.
And suddenly we hear the siren go off again. But this time it's not the attack siren. It's the siren from the front entrance, from the blockade. And Mitchell knows immediately it has to be Jim that has set it off.
Okay.
Because Mitchell knows that he got away. And so he's like, we didn't kill Jim. It's got to be him. So Henry decides to head out with another soldier named Davis to see if they can find him. I should also mention at this point, it is pouring rain. And I mean like buckets on buckets. Like it's very dramatic rainstorm happening outside right now.
Okay.
So once Henry and Davis reach the blockade, they separate and Jim manages to take out Davis immediately, very swiftly. He's very skilled at this point. And like you can kind of see him starting to turn into a little bit more ruthless the more he's experiencing here.
We need that right now.
Exactly. So he takes Davis out. But Henry hears something, so he heads over to see what the noise is. And when Henry heads away, Jim makes it to the car that Henry had come in and sabotages that car. He sabotages the car and then starts sprinting back to the camp. When he gets back to the camp, he heads straight for Mailer and he sets him free. He shoots the chains off of Mailer and Mailer just takes off.
But not at Jim.
No. Well, Jim, to be fair, Jim is standing up on a wall.
Okay.
So he's kind of out of reach, which is why he uses the gun to make sure that Mailer
doesn't.
That is
a risky move, though.
That's what I said. I was like, oh, well, you don't know who Mailer's going to go for. Like, that's really dangerous.
Yeah.
So now we end up back with Selena and Hannah, who are both dressed up in red dresses. And they sit very awkwardly, of course, on the couch waiting to see what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. There's two soldiers in the room with them at the time. And Hannah looks over to Selena and says that the pills are starting to have an effect on her, that she's really starting to feel it. So she did take them.
Okay.
And Hannah, in her drug state, begins to provoke the soldiers, seemingly like without meaning to. She's saying the other soldiers are probably dead. They're not going to come back, that they're going to be next. And they start to like get frustrated. And Selena's like, Hannah, like, shut up. Like, stop, girly. But she doesn't know what she's doing. So a clap of thunder rings out. And the soldiers turn toward the window. And whose face is pressed up against the glass in this moment? Mailer. So Mailer, it's like really, I gotta say, it's a great shot because it's just like all of a sudden Mailer's face is just in the window, like bright red eyes and everything. Mailer bursts through the window and immediately takes down one of the soldiers. Thinking fast, Selena jumps up with Hannah and runs out of the room.
Smart. That's all you can do.
Exactly. So they've just run away. And Hannah is acting a little high at this point, saying, I'm fine, I'm okay, like, what are we doing? She's a little gone. Meanwhile, Mailer has turned one of the soldiers into an infected. So now we have claimed one soldier as an infected, and they have both set off to find more soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
This is all a very chaotic sequence, so it's going to be a little back and forth, just heads up. Mm-hmm. Selena tries to sprint out the front door with Hannah, but of course, here's Mitchell. to stop them from leaving, everybody's favorite character.
Ugh.
We now realize we're up to 3 infected, by the way. While we were gone, we got another one. We got 3 infected soldiers, and it's starting to spread. It's starting to spread through the camp. While Mitchell is leading Selena and Hannah back to the room, like, he saw them escape, he's trying to get them back, Hannah manages to slip away. And it's very chaotic, so the soldiers don't notice, but she just kind of fades off into the dark. And it's weird because in this moment, Selena starts screaming for Hannah. And I'm like, girl, shut up. Like, don't let her go.
Yeah.
She's very floaty right now because she doesn't 100% know what's going on. But she's like, oh, hallway. And she's like, goes down the hallway.
Got it.
We run into Jim again as he takes out another soldier. So that's about 4 down of around 10 or so. He actually takes down Tin Man, Tin Opener. I know.
Yeah.
Tin Opener was a little more on the innocent side, but not completely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Henry arrives back shortly after. So this is, again, it's very chaotic. There's a lot of just running around, a lot of people attacking people. Jim runs around the house now looking for Hannah and Selena while trying to remain pretty stealthy. He happens upon a soldier who's not yet infected, and this man is cowering in a corner. And Jim looks at him as he hears infected coming up behind him, and the man begs Jim, like, don't leave me here, like, don't leave me for them. And Jim looks at him and is like, yeah, no, and he just heads on out. Infected come in, claim another soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, why would Jim help you? So Jim again is running around looking for Selena and Mitchell, and he's ended up in like an outdoor hallway and sees Selena and Mitchell through this rain-soaked window. He knows they're in this specific room. And don't ask me how, but he manages to make his way into the ceiling of said room.
Okay.
He, like, climbs through, like, some kind of skylight, and then it's, like, in an attic, and then he's above this room.
Some, like, crawl space situation.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. So Mitchell has Selena by the throat at this point and is saying to her, it's just us now. Don't worry. I'll get you out of here. Then we'll find a nice little fucking place somewhere. Just you and me.
Oh, my God.
Like, nothing but filth comes out of this man's mouth.
And literally, he's very aware of everything that's going on right now. And that's still what is, like, number one priority in your mind.
All he cares about.
Insane. Yeah.
Actually insane. So Jim is looking down now up at Selena and Mitchell. He can see them. He's in the ceiling and there's like a gap and he can see them. And it's interesting because like you can see that he's like upset, but he's also smiling and he's also kind of got a lot of joy on his face. And it's not because he's happy. It's because I think he knows what he's about to do.
Ooh, okay.
And he's made a decision and he's ready to execute his plan.
Mm-hmm.
He jumps silently down from the ceiling behind where Selena and Mitchell are standing and propels himself forward toward Mitchell in the exact same jump scary way that the infected have been pulling their attacks this entire film.
Oh, cool.
So now Jim is on the other side of that. He's approaching somehow in speedy silence. He grabs Mitchell, who starts aimlessly just firing his gun. Selena manages to get away from Mitchell's grip as Jim repeatedly slams Mitchell's head into a brick wall.
Ooh.
And zero mercy. So Jim's acting a little crazy at this point.
Wait, he's not infected though, but he's
acting
not infected.
Nothing, right? Like we've seen him this entire film.
But Caitlin, he's not infected.
He pins Mitchell to the ground and we see Jim's face as he seems to be aggressively suffocating Mitchell. Is what it seems like. Well, if only. We pan down to see Jim's hands around Mitchell's face, his 2 thumbs shoved into Mitchell's eye sockets. Mitchell's body goes limp. And there's a look in Jim's eyes, and he just doesn't seem quite himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Selena looks horrified. She grabs her machete.
Oh, yeah.
So Jim gets up off Mitchell, turns around and sees Selena holding out her machete toward him with shaking hands. She's like violently shaking. Jim takes a couple quick steps towards Selena. Selena pulls the machete back, begins to swing it forward as Jim approaches her, and then they both stop. Standing about a foot apart, Jim looks at Selena and says, "That was longer than a heartbeat." Selena drops the machete and embraces Jim in a kiss. He's not infected! Everybody clap!
My God, I cannot believe you did that to me.
I know.
Well, I mean, the movie did it to us, so
the movie
did,
because you're really, like, you're not sure, because he's acting like a bit of a madman, and it's like, ooh, is he, like, we don't think so, but is he? Because he's been fighting infected this whole time.
Yeah, and it's been, like you said, like, so chaotic, like, something mm-hmm. could have happened, and it
right.
just,
and you wouldn't have
it.
Known. So, in this moment, if you're Selena, did you swing that machete?
I don't think so.
No.
No, I don't think so. Because I mean, even when I knew, like with Frank, I knew that it had to be done, I would still have that freeze mm-hmm. situation happen. And so here, when I'm not 100% sure, right. that same thing would happen. And I would just be exactly. probably like be backing away and just like try to like just stare him down and be like, I need to make sure. So I would like to think that, yeah, it would probably be, it would pan out the same way for me.
No, I think so too. I've like you said, if it's a gun, it's a different story. Right. But like a machete, swinging a machete on somebody, it's like, no matter the situation, I'm not sure I can do that. So never mind brutal. This man who I've clearly like had feelings for throughout the film and like come to know. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
It's not happening. So they're sharing a very passionate kiss and like a very nice moment when Hannah comes charging in and smashes a bottle over Jim's head. Selena grabs her and says, Hannah, no, like it's okay. He's not infected.
Sure,
Hannah goes, I thought he was biting you. Which to me is just the sweetest, most innocent little line of all time.
Yeah. And also cute her being Hannah. A little protector.
Yes, like, exactly. We stand. Yeah. She's so cute. So they decide now is probably a good time to get the hell out of here. So they run out in the rain and go to get in the taxi because the taxi's still outside. When they open the door, who's in the back seat? But good old Major Henry, because we never saw him die.
He's been in the back of my mind.
Uh-huh. Good old Major Henry. So he looks straight at Jim and he says, you killed all my boys, and delivers a bullet straight through Jim's torso.
Okay. I just don't mind me. I'm just distressed.
You're stressing out. And that's okay. That's okay.
Wait, torso though, it's fine. It could be fine. We don't have any hospital to go to, but we're fine.
So Hannah, she's already in the driver's seat and she decides she's going to take off. With Major Henry in the back seat. Selena's like, yo, like trying to help Jim, who's on the ground. And it's like, Hannah, where are you going? Now, again, this is a moment. Don't ask me how this happens. But
okay,
Hannah drives the taxi up to a spot and then puts it in reverse, backs it up to the door of the building where Mailer is waiting. Mailer bashes through the rear window of the car, attacking Major Henry, dragging him out of the car. And Hannah drives off to grab Selena and Jim. As the car drives off with the three of them, we see Mailer having the time of his life ripping Major Henry to shreds. Once Henry's body stops struggling, we get a glorious shot of Mailer celebrating his victory in front of the camp. Honestly, Slay King.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
I wonder if there's some memories there. Like, I know what you did to me. Like, some mm-hmm. lasting memories. Because I could totally see why, like, fans of this movie would argue there's someone still inside there.
Right. I feel like there is. I mean, it's hard to say because it's like, I also don't know much about zombie lore. So I don't know, like, where things usually fall with zombies. And again, this isn't even zombie. This is infected humans. Yeah. So it's like, where is that line drawn? I have no idea.
Yeah.
So Hannah is driving the car toward the entrance to the camp when she realizes the gates are locked and she starts screaming about it. And Jim's like, Jim, having been shot in the torso, screams at her from the back of the car to just go for it. So she slams on the gas and heads straight for those gates. Mm-hmm. Taxi collides with the gate. Selena and Jim's bodies go flying forward and we get a freeze frame here as their screams echo out.
Ooh.
It's just their bodies flying forward in a freeze frame. Screen fades to black before bringing up a title screen reading, 28 days later, ..
Oh my God. Do you think that has anything to do with like the title of the movie?
I don't know. I wonder. It could be. Like that would be crazy.
Maybe that's why.
We have here a very interesting little hospital montage that happens where we see Selena attempting to save Jim and she's screaming at him to breathe. And the next thing we know, Jim wakes up in a different bed. And this is a really awkward moment, but I'll get to why I think this occurs the way it does in a minute.
Okay.
So Jim wakes up. And he's in a nice room. It's a nice little room. Sun shining through. It's calm. We can hear birds chirping. It's very, very peaceful. Then we see Selena. She's in another room working on a sewing machine, while Hannah can be seen outside working with some large pieces of cloth. It's very peaceful, very calm. It's very sweet. Next thing you know, we're looking down on a valley from the perspective of a low-flying aircraft. We fly over a small rock wall where we see two infected laying on the ground, alive, but barely. They're extremely thin. They look frail. They look weak. It looks as if they're very close to death at this mm-hmm. point. Back at the house that it seems Selena, Hannah, and Jim have inhabited and share together, Jim walks in to see Selena sewing using a red fabric. He makes a comment, "You looked all right in this, you know," implying that she's using the fabric from her dress that she was forced to wear back at camp. Hannah comes barging into the room and she starts screaming, "It's coming." They all run outside and begin grabbing large sections of fabric and running across the lawn. Selena and Jim claim they can't hear anything, but Hannah's like, "No, trust me, trust me. Like, I heard it." They're setting this fabric on the ground as we hear a plane engine in the distance. It comes into view and the three of them begin waving frantically at the plane flying overhead. From the plane's perspective, we see the cloth is being used to spell out "hello" in ginormous block letters on the ground. Mm-hmm. The plane flies overhead while radio chatter can be heard. It's in Finnish, but the translation that we hear is, "Will you send a helicopter?" Selena looks at Hannah and Jim and asks, "Do you think they saw us this time?" Jim and Hannah smile and the movie ends. And that is actually our happy ending of this film.
Okay. Oh, I'm happy these three, we at least got these three. You never know when they're just going to totally devastate you and everyone's just right. dead at the end.
And I just feel like I'm not used to endings this happy in horror these days.
Right.
We really don't get this often. Now, I do want to let you know that this movie actually has multiple alternate endings. And the most, like, respected one is an alternate ending where Jim actually dies in the hospital and only Hannah and Selena make it out at the end, which is, to me, why I think the super awkward, quick hospital montage exists, because they shot it and he's supposed to die in that scene and they probably didn't shoot it in a way where he survived.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know all the details. I just know that, like, it's one of the alternates that just Hannah and Selena are at the cottage.
Got it. That would make sense. Like, because you'd think that the second 28 days later would easily just go right into them at the house.
Right.
And we can put those pieces together. Like, we don't really need to see that they got better, like, in mm-hmm. a hospital. So, yeah, that makes sense. What do you prefer? Like an ending?
I'm okay with this ending because I think Jim dying wouldn't have, like, added anything to the story. It just would have been, like, unsatisfying, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm surprised that people like that ending, because I'm like, well, I guess, do you just like sadness? Maybe.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't know. I don't think he needs to die.
I agree. I read another ending that supposedly was never shot but was storyboarded where, like, I don't know all the details, but, like, essentially they end up coming across Frank again. I guess he doesn't die in this version.
Aww.
And they're, like, in a hospital and there's, like, a scientist that's, like, the only way that we can save Frank is a full blood transfusion. And, like, Jim sacrifices himself to save Frank and everyone's like, no.
I would maybe get that if Selena wasn't also here, because, like, then he's, like, reuniting a family and, like, that, like, completes that, I don't know, start little circle,
I agree.
Whatever. But then, like, we're still sad he's gone and Selena doesn't have anyone. I mean, she has Frank and Hannah, but, like, that's...
It's not the same. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good movie. Oh, God. The surviving aspect.
So, yeah. Do you think you would survive this? What's your score? How are you feeling?
God. Like, just a zombie apocalypse in general. If I had my stepdad with me, I'd be like, we got it. We're golden. If I am just, like, thrown into this specific movie alone.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I'm, like, I'm not tough. I'm just not tough like Selena. I'm going to actually go with a 41%.
41. Okay.
I think, like, in this situation within the movie where there's going to be people that I join forces with,
mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I'm even that high. If I'm alone completely in this universe, zero. It's honestly a zero for me.
You know, that's very fair.
But if I get to meet these characters and be a part of these characters, I'm going to go 41.
41. Okay. So I'll give you our combined score before I give you mine. Our combined score here is 28.
Wait, that's amazing. How fitting.
I gave it a 15 because, truthfully, there's no way. Like, I like I said, I'm not swinging a machete on anybody. Unless I have a gun, I'm not going to be able to kill anyone. I'm also extremely weak and there's, like, physical combat. And, like you said, though, like, if I had Selena with me, sure, like, but she'd probably end up leaving me behind because I'd be so useless. So, like, I don't think I'm surviving this movie.
I feel like I have to stick with my answer just because it gave us the 28%.
Wait, I didn't even register that.
Yes, that's what I left. Mean. Yes. 28 is crazy.
I actually didn't even register that. I was like, yeah, you're laughing because it's so low and pathetic. No, because it's literally 28.
Literally.
Oh my God, I'm so slow. That's insane.
It's so funny how so far I've always had more faith in myself than you've had faith in yourself. Like, I've always given the higher score. I'm curious about the movie that's going to make us flip-flop the other way.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I'm going into it just being like, listen, this is a stacked cast of characters and they're badasses.
Yeah.
And I think I'm like good at taking direction. I think I could fit into what other people tell me to do and I'd be a good follower with these people.
Yeah.
But it, like, the reason it's not 100 obviously is because of those moments throughout the movie where it's on me to pull a trigger or swing a machete. And it's like, those are the moments where it brings it down there for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so curious about these, like, actually being out in the world and people being like, Cassie, you're a fucking 0%. Be real with yourself.
I'm so excited to hear what scores people come up with themselves. Yeah. Because, yeah, like, what's going to be our combined average? Who knows?
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Well, that does it for today's episode of I'd Survive. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we hope to see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.